Is there room in the Democratic Party today for someone who believes in the pro-life position? And just how pro-abortion is the Biden-Harris ticket? That's our topic for this portion of Vocal Point. Hello, I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Human Coalition Action National Legislative Advisor, Chelsea Yeoman. Chelsea, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me today.
Sure. First, let me start with the second question. Just how pro-abortion is the Joe Biden and Kamala Harris ticket?
Well, that's a great question and one that I know every voter should be completely paying attention to, that question specifically. And I cannot overstate how extreme really those two are on this issue, whether it's Biden, who traditionally would have been more middle stream, but now he's openly advocating for packing the courts. He's openly advocating for repealing the Hyde Amendment, which would essentially be your taxpayer dollars paying for a woman's abortion. 80% of Americans actually disagree with that. And then whether it's Kamala Harris's record on voting against infants born alive receiving basic medical care, basic human dignity, and that we know she believes in abortion through the third trimester, no limits, no regulations. And then if you really want to know how deep the Democrats have gone on this issue, read their party platforms at your state level and the national party platforms. They advocate for zero regulations on abortions. And I think 75% of Americans agree abortion should be regulated in some sense or another. And so I think they're deeply out of touch with mainstream voters, mainstream Americans. And obviously, this would be very detrimental to the thousands and millions of lives that are at stake.
Okay, when you refer to packing the court, can you explain what that means and just how unprecedented that would be should they actually attempt it?
Yes, that is a great question. So packing the court would essentially be adding additional Supreme Court seats to the Supreme Court so that Democrats could appoint their own liberal-leaning justices to the Supreme Court and regain their majority. It's overthrowing our entire system of government as we know it at this point and essentially politicizing the court, making the court more like a legislative body than a Supreme Court. So it would be a very, very drastic measure. And notably, he refused to comment publicly or denounce that idea. He said, "You'll find out after you elect me." And I think voters should be paying attention to that. Transparency is very important in this election, and no one has been more transparent, sometimes to a fault, than President Trump on not just his personal views, but he released his Supreme Court justice list years ago, revamped it, re-released it a few months ago. So I think you want to know who you're voting for and what you're voting for when you go to the polls this week, next week, for the early voting or November 3rd. And when it comes to issues like packing the court and abortion, the Democrats are really, really being very extreme right now.
Okay, now I saw some video of Cory Booker, the senator, one of the senators from New Jersey, and he was basically saying in his soliloquy or whatever before, the Barrett hearings, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, he was saying that a majority of the American people oppose any overturning of Roe v. Wade. And so basically, if you were to be, on this court and you were, somehow able to overturn it, you would be opposing the will of the American people. So I want to ask you about that. Where does the American people stand on the issue of Roe v. Wade and their support?
Well, as I mentioned, over 70% of Americans actually support regulating abortion, and that's something that the states have individual rights to decide and determine. They have state sovereignty to regulate abortion. And we think this should just be returned back to the states, back to the people to decide. After 40-plus years of Roe versus Wade, it's still undecided. You'll see Judge Barrett today at the hearings talking about that. It's continued to be litigated and relitigated and relitigated. So certainly in people's minds, this issue has not been resolved. And, I believe it's up to the states to make those decisions. But more importantly, it's up to the states to protect the dignity of human life and preborn children who are vulnerable. And that's something that, especially in the state of Texas where I work on legislation towards that end, to protect vulnerable citizens who just want the right to life.
All right, let me ask you this. I about 30 or 25 years ago, I had the privilege to interview George Gallup Jr., not the one who founded the polls, but he was in charge of the polls for years and years, the Gallup polls. He's since gone on to his reward. But anyway, he told me this, and I want to ask you if you think this is still the lay of the land. He said, you know, 20% of Americans are very strongly pro, these are the words he used, pro-choice. 20% of Americans are very, very strongly pro-life, and 60% are in what I will call the mushy middle. And pollsters can get them to sound like a majority is pro-life or a majority are pro-choice, depending on what they ask and how they ask it. Do you think that roughly that would still be an accurate lay of the land?
I think so. There was actually a Morris poll conducted where they were very open-ended questions. I thought it was a very neutral poll that was conducted. And most Americans are in the middle somewhere. Most understand, you know, many think that there should be exemption for the right to life. But at the end of the day, I do think Americans are more in the middle. If you remove the labels, they agree and coalesce in the middle a lot more. But I also just want to emphasize that this is the social atrocity of our country and of many, multiple lifetimes now, not just my generation, the generation before me. There are millions and millions of children dying annually because this is something we continue to allow. It's a barbaric practice in our country. And I think that what we should be doing is focusing on serving women in need, serving pregnant women, helping alleviate their pain points so that ultimately they do choose life and go on to parent happily or put their children up for adoption, which 75% of our clients say they would prefer to parent if their circumstances were different. I think we as a country, but also as a culture and the church specifically, should really come alongside women so that we can alleviate this atrocity in our country.
Now, there's an irony that I find when it comes to the way the media treats Biden versus, say, the way the left treats Judge Barrett. And it's this way. They try to make him out like he's a good Catholic, and that's good. And they try to make her out like she's a good Catholic, and that's bad. But can you really be a good Catholic, in reference to Biden, and be so pro-abortion as his position is now developed to be?
Well, I do know that the Catholic Church has actually come out and made a lot of statements, different dioceses across the country, about abortion and this election and even Biden. And I know that the Bible is really the only religious worldview that promotes life, that says that humans inherently have dignity because they're created in God's image, that God has a purpose for each life from the beginning, has numbered their days of that child's life. So I do know that it really is in line with the Christian and Catholic worldviews to defend life and defend the vulnerable among us and to protect it at all costs. And so I don't know that if I were a Catholic Democrat, I would have a place in that party anymore because of how extreme they've gone.
You know, there used to be some congresspeople that were pro-life Democrats, but over time, that really seems to have evaporated. And in fact, in Chicago, there was one who was a good friend of Eric Schidler, and I interviewed Eric Schidler a lot, and then the fellow lost in the primary, and he was targeted specifically because he was pro-life. In fact, the mayor of Chicago, strong Democrat, Lori Lightfoot, she said, you know, there's no place in our party for somebody who doesn't believe in, you know, a woman's right to choose, or whatever, something to that effect. It does seem almost as if a pro-life Democrat these days is an oxymoron.
You know, I think that's true, but we know there's a large percentage of the Democrat Party, they are pro-life. I think the Democrats are sending a message right now, loud and clear, hear it from their own mouths at these hearings, that there is no place for people who are believers or of any real religious affiliation or conservative values on some of these social issues left in their party. I mean, the message they're sending to women like me, attorneys like me, are if you care about families, if you care about protecting the preborn, and if you care about your religious views, then you really don't have a place to serve on the Supreme Court. They're very discriminatory in the language they're using.
You know, it's interesting. I noticed that in the first debate, the debate between President Trump and Vice President Biden, I don't even think the issue of abortion came up. Thankfully, in the vice presidential debate, it did come up, and Mike Pence was able to, you know, give that testimony about I'm pro-life, and I'm, you know, pleased that I'm pro-life. I'm not, you know, ashamed of that position.
Yeah, there's no reason to be ashamed. I think they're the most, it's the most human thing of all to understand that that is an innocent life in the womb and the place that should be protected most. And I think that actually our side does a great job of serving women in need who find themselves pregnant and in crisis. There are over 22,000 PRCs in our country. Churches open their doors constantly and provide for resourcing and needs of women around them. So I do think we're the party of, you know, really sympathy for both pregnant women in crisis and their preborn children. I know at Human Coalition Action, we'll serve women until their children are three. So we even give them years if that's what it takes to stabilize their circumstances.
If Amy Barrett does become, you know, the next Supreme Court justice, it probably would be a shift in the court, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg, whom she would be replacing, was very strongly pro-abortion. I mean, she would never rule against abortion. And Amy Coney Barrett, for all we know, maybe, Lord willing, she could overturn Roe v. Wade, which would be a good thing from my view and your view, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, Justice Ginsburg was very strong on this issue, that, you know, she also had some statements in her past that talked about the eugenics background of the movement, and there is a lot there. I know that we have published Black Preborn Lives Matter and called on Planned Parenthood to renounce that their eugenics birthplace and founding with Margaret Sanger. So, I mean, when you really look under the hood of the pro-abortion movement, it's a dark history and it's a sad history. And I think on the pro-life side, we just want to defend life. We want to help women get where they need to go so that we can alleviate these points for them. But certainly all of this matters, not just these discussions or all the Facebook wars that we see going on right now, but what matters is showing up to vote on this issue on November 3rd.
Okay, can you speak closer to the mic, if you would? As far as Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I've even heard that although she obviously agreed with Roe v. Wade, the effect of it, that she allegedly had said it was a, you know, poorly decided decision, which is not uncommon. I've heard others say that even if they like the effects of Roe, they just think as a decision it was poorly decided as constitutional law.
Yes, it was such a poorly decided decision that in Casey versus Planned Parenthood in the early 90s, the Supreme Court actually gutted the original Roe decision and said, we'll let the initial holding stand, but they completely redrafted the reasoning for why, which I think weakens the entire Roe-Casey framework from a constitutional standpoint.
This is a little bit controversial, but there are some who question the whole strategy of the heartbeat bills passed by different states, which are maybe viewed as a means by which, you know, Roe v. Wade could be overturned. But I don't know if you want to weigh in on that.
Absolutely. I think that a lot of states, as I mentioned earlier, this issue is not resolved and they are still wanting to defend life, and rightfully so. Once a heartbeat is detected, there's a very, very high percentage chance that that child will be viable and live a long and healthy life. And so there are reasons when a heartbeat is detected to protect that life. But we'll see what happens. I know that all the circuit courts so far have overturned those pieces of legislation before Supreme Court actually would take one up. There would need to be a circuit split. So we would have to wait on some circuits to uphold a heartbeat bill and say, you know, we now, thanks to medical science and the sonogram and biology, know so much more about preborn children than we ever have, and say that those fact patterns have changed since Casey was decided almost 30 years ago, and that now we must consider protecting that life. And I really do hope that a circuit court does decide that.
Hmm. All right. Chelsea Heumann, thanks so much for being with us. HUCO, HUCO, action.org for more information. Thank you, Chelsea. God bless and all the best.
Thank you.